Mr. Pop.
I would only watch The Voice if I ended up at Guantanamo Bay and I was being tortured. Yet I saw an hour of it during the grand final.
This is Ruck and Roll, your weekly shot of sport and music with Kevin Hillier, Brian Mannix and Mark Fine.
And away we go. Welcome to Ruck and Roll. If you were hoping to join us earlier, we weren't there, but we are here now. Welcome. I'm Kevin Hillier. With me, as always, two of the greats of, I don't know of what, but they're two of the greats. Mark Fine, deli owner of Lenny's Fine Foods, beautiful establishment, quality food, and open again amidst the renos.
Spot on, Kevin. Well, you've got your finger on the pulse. Yes, I am one of the greats. I do great on people, and the other bloke does as well. Wonderful to be here. Wonderful to be here. Looking forward to catching up with the other member of the trio. I'll leave it to you to present him, of course.
And there's nothing like having this man on our live from the Gold Coast, where it is in a different time zone and a different year sometimes. From the penthouse, here's the one and only Brian Mannix.
G'day, Kev. G'day, Finey. And I was listening to last week's show and was delighted to see that Finey had been edited rather than me for a change. So for those of you that were wondering why I kept talking about gout all the way through.
Well, no, we don't have to go back.
Well, we don't have to tell the joke, no. But...
Well, we do, because
no, we
the law
don't.
Says...
No. But I was just pleased that for once I wasn't the most offensive. That's fantastic.
Well, no, that's probably... No, yes, you got that wrong. You were clearly the most offensive. You just weren't edited.
Oh, okay. Well, after the edit, I was probably the most offensive. But anyway, good to be here and looking forward to tonight's recap of the grand finals. And I think the Deathalyzer is going to be a little bit busy this week. So,
There's a couple in the Deathalyzer. Thank you for joining us, Finny, because I know tonight is St Kilda Best and Fairest Night, and I know you would, you'll be watching to see who wins the Trevor Barker medal.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it'll be Jack Sinclair for a second consecutive year.
Would have thought so. The Doggies have theirs on Wednesday night. And who won Essendon's Best and Fairest, Brian? Because you have it in June, don't you, while the season's still going?
I think it was Des Tuddenham again, Kev. So, yeah, he's had a great year, Des. And mind you, there's a lot of tyres missing and a few pies from the canteen missing. But I don't know. I'm not making allegations here. I'm just saying. But, you know, good luck to Des. He's done a terrific job this year with all he's done.
All right, now, grand final. Let's talk about the AFL grand final first. Brian, I'm going to go to you first and talk about the pre-game entertainment and your thoughts on how it went.
I thought it went very, very, very well. I thought they were going to be hard pushed to top Robbie, and I don't know that they did top Robbie, but it was a whole different sort of beast. But this sounded great, though. Look, I'm pretty sure Paul Stanley's wearing a wig, and I know Gene's got a little piece going on there, but that doesn't matter. And the songs were great. I think Gene Simmons is actually miming the vocals in I Want to Rock and Roll All Night. That verse didn't seem to match up to me. And certainly the backing vocals were on a track as well.
Lovely. Yep.
But... look, I thought it sounded good, and I think, you know, the main thing, you know, if they've got a couple little cheap things going on, well, big deal. It's about making a good TV appearance, so fair enough. And I thought that the little kids as Kiss, I thought that was fantastic. You didn't expect that. The flames and the smoke were great, but the little kids as Kiss, and then when little Ace Frehley was up with Ace Frehley doing air guitar, I just thought, this is great. It was like the AFL ads where, you know, the kids look like Ablett and Tip and Woody and all that sort of stuff. But they did it with Kiss, and I thought that was brilliant. I thought, well done, AFL. I think it was a big success. So well done, Kiss. Well done, AFL.
Finey, what do you think of the Kiss part of it?
If it was a concert, you'd want your money back, but it's not a concert. It's a short burst of entertainment. The crowd seemed to love it. The band had a bit of fun. You knew that they were going to smash the guitar and go berserk. You got to suspend a bit of, suspend a bit of belief that there and common sense and realise that they're blokes in their 70s behaving like 22-year-olds. But that's okay. It worked for three songs.
Yep, I agree.
I'd like to have $1,000 that they didn't have a fourth song in them, but anyhow.
Yeah, or maybe not. But I think it's almost a bit like a theatre show. I don't think it was all mine. The drummer was playing live, whether he was playing along with a drum track, but those cymbals and stuff, that was live, and I'm pretty sure Ace Frehley was playing live. But Gene Simmons, he's lifted his hands off the bass a couple of times, and the bass keeps going, well, Gene, that was a bit of a mistake. But so what? It's freaking showbiz, and, but, yeah, I think it definitely worked.
Yeah, it did. I agree with you, Brian, 100%. When they started with I Was Made for Loving You, I thought, oh, hang on, I think they're in trouble here, because it was just the band and the flashpots and the smoke and mirrors and all that stuff. I thought, oh, hang on. When they brought the kids out and got into the other two songs, I thought, okay, you've done it. You've actually thought about this, and it works. I thought it worked its bum off, actually. I thought it was really good in the end.
Yeah.
But I agree with Finey. There was not another. Not only did they not have another song in them, I don't think we would have copped another song. I don't think they've got another song that would have fit.
Correct.
But that was.
I think that's their. It was It's very clever, by the way, that they took the gig, because I wouldn't want to see them in concert. But three songs, get paid $1 million+ for that. I'm sure a couple of million. Go for it.
Well, now here's one thing I did want to bring up. This was the figure that was being bandied around, and I know social media is not certainly, put your hand on the Bible and repeat after me, but the figure that was being bandied around on social media on the weekend was 14 million.
All right, 2 million was...
Well, they supposedly spent 700,000 on pyrotechnics and fireworks, but look, I'll send a message off to my mate now and ask from the AFL and see if he'll tell me what they got paid so we can find out before the show's finished.
Yeah, I mean, if they got 14 million, Robbie Williams should have got 50.
Well, yeah, if you're going to... And you know Meatloaf, I mean? Meatloaf should have got the doll and had to freaking do community service.
Yeah, Meatloaf should have given some back, not taken any at all and given some back. No, I thought it was... there was a lot of criticism about... what's her name? Kate Heidke-Miller and her rendition of the national anthem. I liked it up until she did the Celine Dion vocal gymnastics at the very end. I didn't like that bit, but a lot of people did. And Hunters and Collectors copped a bit of pasting on social media as well for their performance.
Well, hang on, that's not right. That's not fair.
What's not fair?
That's wrong. But they copped a bit of a pasting.
They should have got... I'm sorry.
It's wrong that they got a bit of a pasting.
All right. What's the accuracy then? Tell me. Correct me.
They should have got the biggest pasting in the history of men.
And why would that?
I believe those people at the MCG, because half the people go and get a pie and a drink at halftime.
Yep.
I believe that those people that got a pie and a drink at halftime were spared some of the most boring. I mean, Nat doesn't know Hunters and Collectors. We're watching it on TV. And she said, I bet you this song was a hit 30 years ago. And I said, why? And she said, because he can't sing anymore. He's talking.
I think he always did a bit.
Yeah. I mean,
he did lose. He did sort of.
He had one little rattle in Holy Grail. He had one little yell. But. I mean, you want to play an acoustic set at the MCG, you've got to have rocks in your head.
Well, you'd want to be Simon and Garfunkel to do an acoustic set at the MCG. Yeah.
Well, that's what it was. It was, and that he was trying to get some energy into Holy Grail. It's like if that song Holy Grail ever had any energy, he took the air out of that one.
Yeah, he did. And I mean, he was trying to hide the riff that he ripped off from Boston More Than a Feeling, which is the spine of that song. So I'm watching it, and the first, you know, the acoustic, I've been high and I've been low. And it's like, where's the ba 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 ba? You know, the More Than a Feeling riff. And they didn't really introduce that until about halfway through the song. And it's almost like he's embarrassed about it and he's tried to hide it. And everybody just wanted to see him smile. We haven't seen him smile for 35 years. And apparently the people at the pie and beer stand sold double the pies, double the beer than they normally do at a grand final. Oh. Well done, Mark. Well done, Chuck or Seymour.
And I mean, if they had any balls, he would have played the great sing-along song, You Don't Make Me Feel Like a, You Don't Make Me Feel Like I'm a Woman Anymore.
Yeah, I love that song.
Yeah, because then the whole crowd, all the blokes get up and sing, You Don't Make Me Feel. It's great watching guys that punch in that.
It is good. It is good.
And they do. And then there's a song of theirs that I absolutely love. It's one of my favourite songs.
Which one?
The Slab.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's got a real bit of oomph to it, that's got some murky, you know, river punk to it, that does. That's dirty, that song. But no, you know, it'd be like having the models play the grand final and all they sang was Barbados, you know.
Yeah, no, they'd have way out of mind, out of sight. I hear Motion, Sean sang that with me when I did it. Yeah. That's a great song. Actually, the models have got probably enough songs to do a grand final. Whether they'd get the gig or not might be another matter. But
whether they'd let them sing my two favourite songs.
Man of Action?
No.
Two Cabs?
Yep, Two Cabs and Atlantic Romantic.
Oh, yeah, that's a great EP, that Cut Lunch EP.
Well,
A mini album, I think it was. Yeah, it had six songs on.
I loved it.
I think that's probably, in my mind, their best work. I'm always telling Sean, why don't you do Two Cabs when you play with us? Oh, well, Scotty just wants me to play the big ones. I was going to, Scotty, just play for Two Cabs. That's cool. You know,
I used to live in a suburban street in Elston, right, that was totally residential. Except for one building, the RSL. And that RSL became the Flying Saucer Club. Did you ever play there, Bob? Oh,
yes, my brother did. And I used to go see my brother and his band, the Flying Saucers. So that's probably how they got the gig. But, I've been to the Flying Saucer Club. It was good.
Yeah, that was in St. George's Road, Elstonwick, and I used to live in that street. So we walked down there quite a bit and I saw the models there. It was great. They were brilliant.
Yeah.
But they played the whole lot.
Yeah, they're great.
Now, okay, so that's halftime. Now, I thought Brady was terrific. I thought that was good. I thought. I thought the little touch with the Ronald Dale Barassi mention was nice too. So I enjoyed Mike's performance, Mr. Mannix.
I enjoyed Mike's performance, but it's like, we wheel this friggin' song out every year. Surely there's something else we could do. And, look, I thought the Barassi moment was good, but those big notes he tries to do at the end, he's got the – it's almost operatic, it sounds operatic now. But when a singer gets old, you get this quiver in your voice. Dale Ryder pointed it out to me, and it's like you hold a big note, it's like – but then it becomes sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I thought his big notes, right, I can hear your age in your voice. You know, it's still a big friggin' note for you to hit. But, Mike's a good guy and that. But Peter Sullivan kind of got dudded with that song as far as I know, in that Peter co-wrote it and Mike gets all the friggin' credit for it. And, it was good. People obviously loved it. But for me, I'm thinking, well, Mike, do something different with it this year. Why don't we get some girl singers or something and do a disco version of it or something. You know, just try something a bit new with it.
Yeah, well, that's up to the AFL to do that. I mean, they just go, Mike, you're doing up there Cazaly every year, and that's what we're doing with that. They don't look for anything different with that. That's kind of become one of those. It's like the national anthem. You'll do it. You'll do it at 1:15 on grand final day for however long you're here for.
Yeah, I didn't think the version of Waltzing Matilda was too good either.
I thought it was bloody awful, to be honest.
Well, the singing was adequate, I guess. I loved the Aboriginal sort of chanting stuff at the start. I thought that was really cool. I thought, yeah, okay, all right. But then the way they played Waltzing Matilda, it just had no groove. It just didn't sit well, you know, like the rhythm of it. It was like the wrong tempo or the wrong bass line or the wrong drum feel. I don't know, but it just didn't sit in the groove like I felt it should have. So, but good to hear Waltzing Matilda at the grand final.
Yeah,
and particularly good to see an Indigenous girl sing it. You know, I thought that was pretty cool. Oh, great. Here's one of our First Nations singing a Whitey song. And I thought, well, that's good. That was really good.
Okay. Final thoughts, Finey, on the pre-game entertainment before we move into the actual game?
I thought there was an opportunity for Mike Brady to sing his best song, which is not up there, Cazaly.
One Day in September?
Mm. No, because it was very timely, because Collingwood was in the grand final. Mm. He should have sung Hard Yakka. Who used to be the sponsors of Collingwood?
Yeah, they did. Right? They did. And Brades did write that one as well.
Yeah. I mean, there's only two words in it, but it's a great song.
Yes. Yes. Didn't stretch the thesaurus too far. Now, the game itself, let me say that I thought the television coverage was bloody awful in terms of the cameras. We seemed to be missing a camera that should have been picking up play a little closer for us to see. Everything seemed to be long, wide shots, and this bloody camera that they insist on using over the top of the ground, like a hovering helicopter camera. It's obviously a drone camera. God, that's annoying. I just thought too much of all that arty-farty stuff. Just let us watch the game the way we normally watch the game. I don't care if it's a grand final. Don't bring your new bells and whistles. Just do it like you've been doing it all year, which is in ordinary times during the year, but I thought the actual camera coverage of it was pretty bloody ordinary, to be honest.
Spot on. There was a key shot of goal in the third quarter that they completely missed. Something went completely skew-whiff with that. What was the editing on that? What was going on there?
I said to Sarah at one stage, it's like the bloke who's directing this has never seen a game of AFL football before in his life.
Yeah, there were some terrible shots. I mean, has that been talked about much in social media? How bad the camera work was?
No, you couldn't pick up the ball. And I know there was issues with the sun and the shading and all that stuff. But the it's not like it's the first time we've ever had a grand final at the MCG on a sunny day.
No, there was some terrible editing, and I thought the commentary was appalling. Now, when I say appalling. Probably for exactly the opposite reason people would have expected. I felt maybe they were conscious of some of the antics that Brian gets up to during the season and Brayshaw. It was too subdued. They did not give that pulsating last quarter the gravitas or the excitement it deserved, and I am sure it was better done on radio when Hutto would have been calling it, and Tim Lane and even Jared Whateley, and these guys would have done a much better job. I know they would have. That goal by Cameron to put them in front of the last quarter was commentated in a very ho-hum manner, I reckon, by James Brayshaw. I just felt the whole thing was they were just holding back and they never got any oomph into their commentary. In fact, you see, there's a case to be made that last quarter and a half, or definitely the last quarter, of course, it's a grand final, it's close, so it's exciting, but it was not exciting football. The actual game
was scrappy as shit.
The first half was great, but that last quarter was very tense. But they didn't work on the tension. They just sort of, very in a monotone manner, kept throwing the balls out of bounds, throw up, you know. And those last minutes pass without the keen observation of this is the last game of the year. It's all chips on the table. You know, you don't need much to happen for that to be exciting in a grand final for the commentary. Listen to the 66 grand final. It wasn't brilliant football, but every inch gained was important. But they just seemed to lose the perspective. And, of course, it wouldn't be a game commentated by Brian Taylor if he doesn't observe something that nobody else... How many people would have watched that game on TV and at the ground? 5 million?
Yep.
Yet he was the only person that decided that at one point Jack Crisp had done his hamstring.
Yes.
Oh, he's done his hamstring. Keep an eye on this. He's grabbed high for his hamstring. No, he's running away. He's fine.
Mind you, Brian did also say that the crowd was 1,024.
Yeah, I mean, that's a blue. I don't mind that.
Yeah.
You know, we know that that's just an error. But he actually sees things that nobody else could ever see. Nobody on the planet would see Dunny's hamstring.
Well, let me just say about the TV coverage, apparently KISS were very upset that Channel 7 didn't capture the moment when Paul Stanley actually smashed the guitar. And so, therefore, they said, we're vision switching and directing the show from here on in. And that's why the coverage, as you said, Kev, looked like somebody that had never watched footy before, because it was Gene and Paul calling all the shots after they were humiliated by not seeing Paul Stanley's guitar get smashed.
Yes, there was some interesting switching before and after and during the game. Yeah, and I agree with you. I'm watching the game here at home, and I've got a Collingwood, you know, my son barracks for Collingwood, and he was bloody nervous as buggery about, you know, that last few minutes of the game. But that wasn't coming through the speakers. You're absolutely 100% correct. It was anything but coming through the speakers with the commentary.
Why were they holding back? That Charlie Cameron goal, they're in front with 10 minutes to go in the grand final. Cameron loses control of the ball, regains it brilliantly, goal. You know, where's the crescendo and the excitement?
Yep, yep.
They did not cover themselves in glory, and I've had personal relationships with both BT and James Brayshaw that make me want to defend them every time. And I think Brayshaw, for a standard home and away game, is a good commentator. I really do.
Yeah.
Because he did not rise to the occasion of a... Was it a great grand final? Yeah, it was, because it had highlights, it was close, there were lead changes, the team that won was down with 7 or 8 minutes to go. That's a very exciting grand final. They just didn't do it justice, I don't think.
Well, I think they didn't follow the basic rules of commentating. And the basic rules of commentating are you talk in a normal kind of voice, but once the ball gets in the 50-metre arc, you've got to pitch it up. So it goes something like this. You tell me when the ball gets into the 50-metre arc. Draper taps it down to Parrish, kicks it long, hand pass to Merritt, goes there to... Oh, my God! 2 metre, Peters grabbed it! What you do? Well, as soon as you get to the 50-metre, you've got to go... Oh. And that voice.
As someone who's called, Finey, was that your modus operandi?
No, the ball's inside the 50 too much. Look, I'm not a big one for the guttural, you know. I don't like that. I know a few commentators that do the guttural sound.
Oh, he's got the ball. This is a magic moment.
Well, for me, the best commentator's Hutto. He's brilliant. And you know what else I find a real pity? So 5 million people are watching it, and, you know, the majority of Collingwood fans can't get to the ground, and a lot of them went all year, but we know that that's the case. When you've got 100,000 members and a million fans, not everyone's going to get to go, sorry.
Yep.
And I feel it's very frustrating that you watch all season. If you're a big fan of football, if you can afford Foxtel, you get it at home. If you can't, you go to the pub and watch it, because it's great to watch the footy without ads. And yeah, I think it's very annoying that the one game of the year that a lot of diehards are forced to watch is peppered with ads. I mean, Collingwood hit the front with the Degoey goal. You want to soak in what happens. You want to see the players running around, and you've been able to enjoy that all year, and all of a sudden it's a fucking ad fest and I get bombarded with 40 demands for me to watch the last episode of The Voice. I wouldn't watch 3 minutes of The Voice. I would only watch The Voice if I ended up at Guantanamo Bay and I was being tortured. yet I saw an hour of it during the grand final. Yeah. Of course, it was an hour of 1 minute of the same thing. I've now had voice saturation. I don't think it's fair to suddenly have to watch a game. You know, you turn to Foxtel and they go, the replay's on in 2.5 hours.
Well, can I just say, in defence of, and you talk about defending Brian Taylor and James, part of the loss of the drama of that last 10 minutes of that game was those friggin' ads. Because
it's not right.
Yeah, because you had this fabulous thing where, you know, Cameron kicks that goal, then De Goey kicks that goal, and you go, Jesus Christ. Oh, okay, there's Patrick Dangerfield getting his bloody car backed over again by some Sheila from Amy. And it absolutely kills the momentum.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter if you're in a pub. If you're in a pub watching it, you wouldn't even know the ads were on because the entire pub goes crazy when De Goey kicks the goal and you've actually got your own crowd and atmosphere.
Yeah, true.
So when I was at SEN, I must have hosted, in the time I was there, 8 or 9 grand final things at pubs.
Yep.
You know, I got the gig. It was a great payer for me, grand final day. Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter that there were ads. It really didn't. The whole pub goes crazy. You know, everybody's jumping on top of each other, fist in the air, and then the footy comes back on. But when you're sitting at home, 2 or 3 of you, or in my case, one of me and a very disinterested Natalie, who is on her iPhone, oh, what happened? Brisbane hit the front. Oh.
You know what her comment was when
I said Brisbane hit the front? They're not the Magpies, are they? I said, no, they're not the Lions. Now, come on.
Work with me here. Yeah.
Well, do you think that there's I'm just proposing a conspiracy theory here, but, you know, spoke about this on the show during the year and probably over the last couple of years, but this idea that somebody kicks a goal and then they immediately run to the bench. Do you think that's got something to do with the television ads?
No idea.
Well, I'm going to say it's true.
Mm. No idea.
Saying that coaches have been told by the AFL you've got to pull the bloke off, and then when he's kicked the goal, you've got to ask him to go to the bench. Oh, God, I'm funny. And because we're going to an ad, so we don't want it to look too exciting with him hanging around on the ground because, you know, we don't want to see that. We just get him off so there's not too much celebrations because we're going to a McDonald's ad.
People ask why that happens when a player kicks a goal, that happens. And do you know they did a survey amongst the players?
Mm.
It's really interesting. And did you know that 87% of the players said that they actually like getting pulled off by the coaches?
I'm not surprised with that statistic. We move on.
The other 13 said they prefer to get sucked off.
Yeah, okay.
There's this week's edit. Perhaps not.
Thank you. Now, let me just move now.
If you edit that, I will be very angry.
Now, let me just move on now to the post-game presentation and the handing of the cup and the medals and all that stuff. Someone's got to tell the 3 or 4 players who get medals, pay attention to the kid that has given you the medal, shake his hand, give him a high five, give him whatever it is, but pay attention. Don't fresh air any of those kids. Don't ignore them. Don't turn around to do a phone thing or you know, scream and yell like a dickhead. Those kids are up there. It's a big moment for them. They're probably nervous as buggery. Be nice. There were 3 or 4 of the Collingwood players who made complete dicks of themselves by either fresh airing the kid or just treating the kid like, you know, give me my medal and piss off.
I didn't see it, Kev, but I did hear that a couple of the kids were kind of ignored and apparently nobody shook the guy from Hey Dad's hand either.
That's right. Now, so that's any final words on the AFL Grand Final and then we'll move on to the NRL Grand Final, which was equally as exciting, probably even more.
I thought it was a good game because it was close, but I didn't think the standard of footy was that great in that Nobody seemed to get a flow on, you know, when they connect and it just moves really quickly. It seemed to be a lot of tackling, and, you know, credit to them for their tackling, and they want to win. They don't want to lose, and I get that. But, you know, I think I've seen better games of actual play of football. You know,
this was a great game.
I felt it was pretty scrappy, but, you know, I was enthralled because it was close.
Yep. I'm not sure it'll go down as one of the greatest grand finals ever, but it was certainly a gripping grand final. And, well, you know, good afternoon's viewing. Now, the NRL on Sunday night.
That's not my last observation.
Yeah.
One more thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny how things go. Peter Frampton's now got a premiership medal.
Billy, yeah.
How do you know it was Billy and not Peter? Neither of them can touch the ball.
Well, he dropped it about four times in the first 15 minutes, didn't he?
Correct. Same time, people go, I say that. I said, how about Peter Frampton? They go, oh, Billy, you mean? I said, I don't know. Maybe. You tell me.
Yes. And yet I've seen a couple of Collingwood people defend him like there's no tomorrow, saying that he did his job.
Oh, he had a great game on. He had a great game on Harris Andrews. Bullshit, Harris Andrews has had a bad game.
Yeah, yes. If he'd taken a couple of those marks early, you would have gone, ah, there you go. But he fair to, couldn't catch a cold on a wet day. He did struggle.
You know, saying that he had a good game on Harris Andrews is like saying, you know what? I realise every time I have chicken and sweet corn soup for lunch and roast chicken for dinner, the Premier of Victoria resigns.
Yeah. Oh, why haven't we spoken about that?
No, well, just let's do the NRL.
Let's keep it on sport, okay.
We'll get to the Death Eliza and Dan shortly. Now, the NRL, amazing game to watch. If you're not a rugby league fan, you probably weren't watching it anyway, but amazing game to watch. Penrith were down 24-8. The Broncos looked like they were steaming towards a grand final win, and then Nathan Cleary decided to pick the entire Penrith side up and carry it on his back across the next 15 minutes, and they finished up winning. The biggest, I think, comeback in a grand final, 16 points down, and they came back and won it, and literally he won it on his own. He was just absolutely sensational. I know Bobby Hill got all three votes in the Norm Smith, but Nathan Cleary, I think, might have actually got the 3-2 and the 1 votes. So spectacular was his performance to win that game for that side. So they've copped an awful lot of negative comments about the Tina Turner tribute show that was the pre-game entertainment. They've given them a savage bake on social media over that.
What sort of things are they saying?
Oh, just that, well, you know, it's a musical. What the hell were you doing putting a musical on when it's the grand final of the, you know, the biggest night of the NRL season?
Well, you know, there's the Tina Turner connection was simply the best.
That's what I thought. I didn't have a problem.
Yeah, I thought it was terrific. And but I'm probably biased because Ruva, the girl that plays Tina, was in We Will Rock You with me, and she's a fantastic girl. And
she can sing. Man, because she built it out.
She can sing. She's from Zimbabwe.
Okay.
And, you know, she's just amazing. She used to fill in for Casey Donovan when Casey Donovan was, you know, sick or something.
Yep.
But she had a fairly big part of the show anyway. But I thought she was terrific, and I thought she really nailed Tina Turner. Now, you know, I thought it was a spectacle. I thought it, the songs were rocking, and I think simply the best at the end, you know, sort of all tied in with the NRL. I'm really, you know, people are pretty tough, I reckon, because it looked great and she sang great and she looked like Tina, but the wig was a little bit too blonde. But apart from that, I was really proud of Ruva and the whole team. I thought they were great.
I thought it was respectful in terms of Tina's passing and what that campaign did for rugby league at that time, headed by her and then by her and Barnsley and stuff. I didn't have a problem with it. I wasn't watching it like a hawk. I was in and out a little bit watching it. But I thought it was. I must admit, daylight saving threw me completely out of the timing for the NRL grand final. It was still light, and I'm looking at the telly going, shit, hang on, what was the Tina Turner show on? It's 7:15. Thinking it was a lot earlier. Finally, do you watch the NRL?
Yeah, I mean, every year I turn on for the pre-game entertainment, and every year that it's not Machine Gun for Lay Show singing Pussy Town, I turn off.
Fair enough. One
year I was not disappointed.
Yes, correct. What'd you think of it?
The game?
Well, the whole package.
The game's the best game of grand final I've seen in either sport.
It was good.
I mean, that was just amazing. No, I'll say the best game where I didn't have a vested interest.
Yep.
It was unbelievable. I mean, Nathan Cleary, you said he was the best halfback ever.
I don't know if he's the best halfback ever, but by Jesus, he's building.
I think he'll end up being it.
Well, I was going to say, he's building himself towards that, to get into that era with those blokes like the Alan Langers of the world, who have a body of work that he hasn't quite matched yet, but by Jesus, he's well on the way to doing it.
Yeah. So I can see an amazing season by Melbourne Storm as well. They finished top four again.
Yeah, I know. And quite frankly, 10 of their blokes could bob up in your Wheaties and you wouldn't know who they were given the personnel changes they had at the end of last year. So, no, they did terrific.
Yeah. So, there you go. Well done.
Yep.
No. AFLW tips, how did we get?
Yep, we'll get to them. The only other sporting thing I want to mention is I'm loving, and not just because I'm a Spurs supporter, but I'm loving watching.
VAR cheated and they won the game. You would have loved that.
Two red cards
and blatant cheating.
Within the parameters of the rules of the game, you can only work with that, and they won again. But the fervour that has become Ange Postecoglou with those Spurs fans is just beautiful to watch. I'm really enjoying that.
I just saw it before. I don't know. What did they win? Was it just a game or was it just a championship?
No, just a normal
game. But he's walking off with the T-shirt with his fist in the air and everybody's just clapping him and loving him. And
did you hear what they were singing? They're singing the Robbie Williams song about Ange that they changed the lyrics to. It's bloody brilliant. It's fantastic. It's really good.
Angel or something and make it an Angie.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
So,
good on him.
So I believe next week you've got seven-man Gillingham in the FA Cup. You reckon you can beat them?
We're a chance.
Yeah.
Don't start. Was Morecambe or Wise, either Morecambe or Wise was a Gillingham fan, I reckon? Because I remember that's
yeah, fair possible. So what's unusual about Gillingham?
I don't know.
Their nickname?
No, I don't. I don't know their nickname off the top of my head.
The Gills.
Oh, okay. Is that
it? So it's pronounced differently to the actual name.
I was going to say, that is weird, isn't it? Now, I'm the newly crowned Mr. September because I picked Collingwood, so that gives me 6 wins in the final series and both of you finished on 5. So you caught Brian in the end, Finey.
But you didn't beat me, Finey.
I'm telling you, the very thought of finishing behind Brian in any tipping competition was unpalatable, so I'm glad it recorded.
Now,
I think it should be shitting you that you couldn't beat me.
It'll be on my tombstone. Here lies an embarrassed man. But at least I'll get a burial because otherwise I would have wanted an unmarked grave.
Yep. Now, this week in the AFLW, Brian, a 4.
And we're back.
Kev, a 5. Finally, a 6. So the podium finish looks like it probably will in 4 weeks' time when this season, when the home and away season finishes. Finey's on top of the ladder again on 33, followed by Hillier on 32 and Mannix on 29.
And we're down the back and they put some bunch into the race. Do you want to hear the race call of this one?
Yeah, go on.
Down the back, 1,600 metres to go, and the leaders have put a bit of pace in this. Fine goes up. He puts his neck in front of Hillier, and as expected, Mannix, the rank outsider, can't keep up. He's dropped 3 lengths astern.
Yes.
Actually, and just interesting while we're talking, I'm just watching, I'm not listening to it because I'm listening to you guys, but just on the TV, it's been this big article on the project, a segment on the project, about all of these people getting Collingwood Magpies 223 tattoos.
Tattoos, yep.
And we knew that was going to happen. Well predicted, finding.
I did get a phone call today from the father of the very unlucky Dan McStay.
Oh. Can I just say about that?
At least I've got a booking with Trevor. That's good.
I reckon they should not. I don't think he should give medals to the blokes who don't play on the day, but I think you should get a grand final medal if you play on the day, and I think the club should have, like they do it. This is the only thing about the American system that I do like. They give the NFL teams whatever it is, 100 medals or whatever, and then they get to give them to whoever they think deserves the 100 rings. So I reckon there should be a grand final medal, and then there should be the a premiership medal that you give to the Dan McStays, the Taylor Adams. I mean, seeing him bawling his eyes out after the game was a bit hard to watch, given, you know, the contribution he'd made during the year to them being there. So I reckon that's, if they instigated a second medal, which the club gives to everyone involved in the premiership, you would allay some of those. Because you're not going to – given Taylor Adams a medal on Saturday would not have made him feel any better about not being part of that team.
Yeah. No. But, yeah, no. Anybody that's played a game for them in that year should be
Get a premiership medal. Get a premiership medal. Not a grand final medal, a premiership medal, because you were part of the premiership.
There you go. Yeah, I played three games. I kicked two goals and –
Oh, John Noble played every game up until, what, 3 weeks ago?
Oh, yeah. Give everybody a ribbon for participating.
Don't say that.
You know what? They should give the Essendon players a medal for making all the other teams feel good.
Derek Kickett deserved a medal. In 93, Derek Kickett won so many games for us. We'd always be losing at halftime. Then we'd unleash the Kickett. And he'd do about 375-metre torps, get us kick three goals. We were back in it. And, okay, he had a shit final series. But he played 22 games, I think, that year. And he won us a lot of games. And, you know, he didn't get to play the grand final. He stuck Dean Wallace or Tim Watson in instead. But he deserved recognition of his contribution to that flag.
I'm saying a premiership medal. Not a grand final medal, a premiership medal.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, Kev. I think you're right. I'm agreeing with you.
All right.
I'm just reinforcing your point.
All right. Now, let's get to the tips for the AFLW. We start Friday night. Western Bulldogs take on Carlton. The Doggies haven't won a game yet. Can they win this one, Finey?
No.
Carlton for Mr. Fine. Brian, Western Bulldogs or Carlton?
And it's a no from me too, Kev.
Carlton for you, Western Bulldogs for me. GWS play West Coast, who won a game. They won a game on the weekend. So they're playing GWS in Sydney, but I don't think they can win. That'll be GWS. Finey?
GWS.
Brian?
Oh, you guys shit me. I want a GWS. I've been the champion of GWS all year. Well, now you guys have taken... All right, GWS.
Melbourne play Adelaide at Casey Fields on Saturday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Melbourne will win for me. Finey?
Melbourne.
Brian?
Where's Casey Fields?
That's up near Cranbourne.
Cranbourne.
Mm.
No, look, if Daisy's busy this week, she won't be able to pop in and give the girls a bit of a rev up. And without that, I think they'll be a bit nonchalant about the whole game and the other team will win.
St Kilda play. That's Adelaide. St Kilda will play Hawthorn at RSEA Park, lovely Linton Street. I think the Saints will win there, Finey.
They're going all right now, St Kilda.
Yeah, they are. Are you picking them, Brian?
What day is that go?
Saturday.
I'm waiting to hear what Finey's doing.
I might go.
Yeah, okay. Well, you would, so I'll put you down for a St Kilda win?
Put me down for a pie and a seat.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And a St Kilda win. So, Brian, St Kilda or Hawthorn?
Well, Saturday I might go too. I guess the equaliser three. Hawks, they're a terrific team. They totally underestimated and they're going to really prove a point this weekend.
Port Adelaide played the Sydney Swans at Alberton Saturday afternoon at 5:05. Brian, who wins?
Where is it played at,
Kev? Alberton in beautiful downtown Adelaide.
Oh, beautiful people in Adelaide. It's a lovely part of Australia. And who's playing? Port and
Sydney Swans.
No, it's Port for me. The girls from Sydney Swans haven't had the footy culture that the Port Adelaide girls have. They've grown up with it.
Oh.
And so, therefore, the Port Adelaide girls will be a little bit more astute and will win.
All right. Finally, I'm going for Port Adelaide. Who do you like?
Yeah, I'll go for Port.
Okay. Brisbane play Collingwood at Brighton Homes Arena, which is up in Brisbane. I think Brisbane will win that one. Beat the Pies. Finally.
Brisbane.
Brian.
It's a tough one. Brisbane have had absolutely no cricket luck this weekend. Maybe this is the revenge thing, or do things come in three? I'm going to say Collingwood.
Collingwood, okay.
Things come in threes.
Okay, so they lost the rugby league, they lost the AFL, and now they'll lose this.
It's a three. It's a threesy.
Now, the Reed Oval in Warrnambool is the venue when Essendon play Geelong. I think Geelong will bounce back here, and they lost to Melbourne on the weekend, but they'll bounce back and win. Finey?
Geelong.
Brian?
Well, having spent a little bit of time in Warrnambool, I know that it's as windy as shit.
Correct.
It's possibly got some of the worst winds ever. Where are the Bombers from? Windy Hill. Where do the girls train? Windy Hill. It's a smash for the Bombers because they're used to the conditions.
You know you're going to f*** that up because you're using logic. Richmond take on the Gold Coast at Icon Park. So that's obviously Carlton's home ground that they're playing on Sunday afternoon at 3:05. I'll go for the Tigers. Finey.
Tigers.
Brian.
Well, I popped in down to the Gold Coast Suns.
Did
you? And I had a chat to some of the girls, and they are so excited about, you know, A, going to Melbourne and doing some shopping. But they are pumped. They want this, and they're going to buy some pumps, so they're extra pumps. And I think that, you know, they just really want to prove a point. So I think they're going to be really surprise everybody, and I'm so proud of them.
Okay, Gold Coast to win that one. Fremantle play the Kangaroos at Fremantle Community Bank Oval on Sunday afternoon at 5:05. I think the Kangaroos will win that one. Finey?
I'll tip the Kangaroos, and I'll also tip that Brian will take 3 minutes to give us his tip.
Righto, Brian, Fremantle or the Kangaroos?
Nice to think. Oh, God.
You guys just throwing something at the dartboard. I actually thought about this.
Right.
Will dock the Kangaroos. They will dock the hell out of them.
Okay. Dockers for Brian. I'll put you down for none and we'll move on. There's the AFL tips. Righto, Brian, it's time to open up the you-know-what.
Gentlemen, now prepare yourself, your family. If you have a weak heart or have a suffering of epilepsy, please turn away now because this is...
Right, and a sad one that I didn't see reported anywhere and still haven't seen reported anywhere. I only found this going through the Wikipedia list. Jeff Motley passed away at the age of 88. 258 games for Port Adelaide, played in 9 flags, 28 times for South Australia, won a McGarry Medal back in the mid-60s, and father of Peter Motley, who, of course, came over and for Carlton and then was involved in that terrible car accident. But I haven't read anything anywhere about Jeff Motley passing away, so that was a bit of a surprise. From the acting world, Sir Michael Gambon passed away at the age of 82. Dumbledore in Harry Potter, and of course, a renowned Shakespearean and theatre actor in the UK. So he passed on at the age of 82.
Well, that must be a bit of a jinx role, because who was the bloke that played Dumbledore before him?
Oh yeah, he took
another Shakespearean actor.
Yes,
Terrific actor.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of his name. I was reading.
So everybody that plays that role dies. Maybe because you're 80 when you take the role on. But it's a bit like, it's a bit like the part in Rocky, the people that play Rocky in Rocky Horror. The amount of them blokes that have committed suicide or died,
oh, really?
It's almost like that sword of Damocles hanging over my head. People reckon that it's jinxing the actor that sings it. And there's a big, I don't know, probably on the internet, people can read about it. But if you play that role, you're endangering your life.
Okay. Oh.
That's why I'm not muscly.
You there, fellas?
Yeah.
Richard Harris?
Yes, it was. It was Richard Harris who played.
Didn't he play Dumbledore originally?
Yes, he did. Correct.
No, he's MacArthur's Park.
Yeah, but he played.
Sir Ian McKellen, isn't it?
No. Richard Harris played in the first two Harry Potter films as Dumbledore. Then Michael Gambon did films 3 to 8. So
he's Richard Harris. He got old quick, didn't he?
Someone left the cake out in the rain.
He couldn't. You know, he could never make it again.
Yeah, exactly.
No. Unlike his brother Rolf, who did it over and over.
Stop it. He wasn't related to Rolf Harris at all. Now, the other passing, a very sad one, this one at the age of 90, David McCallum passed away. For the last however many years, and it seems like forever, he's been Ducky on NCIS, and brilliantly portrayed in that. But I remember him as a kid in The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
Ilya Kuryakin.
And then sort of disappeared from the screens and was just doing little bits and pieces and then came back in NCIS and had a wonderful, wonderful run with Mark Harmon in NCIS as the forensic scientist, Ducky. 90 years of age. So he had a pretty good innings. 90's pretty fair knock, I reckon.
I wanted my hair to look like Ilya Kuryakin when I was a little kid. He had blonde hair and that, but I wanted that triangle because he sort of had a bit of a part and I just had a fringe and I was going, Mum, just cut the triangle. Because you know, Brian, Well, that's sad. I enjoyed his work.
Yeah, me too. All right, Brian, that's it. Close her up.
Dun, 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 dun. No, that's a wedding. All right. That concludes tonight's episode of The Analyzer.
It does, and it brings us to our topic this week, which Brian came up with, and we refined a little after the initial thought was five animals that you really like. Well,
hang on.
What?
I thought chicks would like that.
Hang on.
Girl audience. I'm going to regret saying this.
One more thing is popping up here.
Yeah, but we should mention the Daniel Andrews.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sorry, the passing on of the I meant to put him in the political deathalyzer. That's a new one we've got.
The death of dictatorship.
No, the political deathalyzer, and he jumped in it on his own accord, and off he went. So what do you want to say about it, Finey?
Well, I reckon he's got a pretty good legacy.
Now we got an argument brewing.
All right.
What would that legacy be, Mr. Fox?
Well, as painful as it has been in progression, and I feel that it's gone over the top now, I really do. Certainly the public works, the level crossings have made Melbourne a better place to drive around in. Those level crossings, that was a big part of his legacy.
I'll grant that.
I think he, like any politician, responded to public opinion polls during COVID. But I've got this thing about COVID.
You're on drugs. Go on.
Well, hang on. I've got a 93-year-old mother who's still alive. And for all the old people that are alive and survived COVID, well, you can't complain about, you don't know whether somebody would have passed away or not, but I know it was a relatively low, except for the nursing home fiasco, and I feel for those people. But for the general populace, it was a pretty safe place to live. Now, you know, you look at COVID as many things, but I think life and death is the most important thing. And I know my mother's still alive, and I know Natalie's grandparents are in their 90s, survived it. In fact, three of her grandparents survived COVID. Two have since passed, but you really can't measure accurately how many lives were saved by those very, very stiff rules. And they were stiff, don't get me wrong. They were harsh. And a lot of people suffered under the harshness. But they're still around to talk about it today.
Can I talk about Dan Andrews' legacy too, Kev?
Yeah, hang on. No, so wait till Fonny's finished.
That's all you got with Dan Andrews. Okay, I'd like to talk about his legacy.
Here we go.
He came into power. He assured us that by cancelling the Northwest tunnel or whatever it was going to be, that he would not pay the $1 billion. He ended up paying $1.5 billion to do nothing. Okay, that's shit. But then the red shirt people, that's bullshit. That's the thing. Now, let's not forget about the COVID, when he hires people that are not trained, not equipped. 800 people freaking died over that. 281 days of lockdown I put up with. He's got a small business minister that's never run a small business. He leased out our harbour to China for 99 years, and then he gets $9 billion for that. Fantastic. So what happens? Oh, I'm going to build the tunnel under the West Gate. Well, that's going fucking well, isn't it? So he's got $9 billion, but rather than use the $9 billion to pay for the stupid freaking tunnel, which nobody's tested the soil properly to start with, rather than test it and do it properly, and rather than use $6 billion of your $9 billion you got from selling out our harbour, you are now pushing up the tolls and extending the tolls on the Tullamarine Freeway. So people like me who used to live in Airport West, we've got to pay for this frigging tunnel that I've got pretty much no frigging use for. That is bullshit. And I could go on for hours.
Go on for hours, Brian. Let some of it be accurate, or all of it. He doesn't raise the tolls. All those roads are owned by private companies. That doesn't go to the state government.
No, he got them to pay for the tunnel.
He doesn't raise the toll.
He extended the toll, said, look, you guys, urban whatever, you pay for this and we'll extend you an extra 15 years on the Tullamarine Freeway and you toll the shit out of people, do what you like, but you're paying for it and that's the deal. No, good f***ing riddance. What an asshole.
Written, spoken and authorised by Brian Mannix of the Goldcast.
9 o'clock curfew that the police didn't ask for and the medical people didn't ask for. And if you get caught at 9:05, you're going to get a fine.
Written, spoken and authorised by Brian Mannix.
In a positive and constructive way.
The only thing I'd say in all of this is there is a mentality about that I think Dan Andrews is going to have to live with, is that there was an enormous amount of money that got used not to do things. And it's very hard for us as the generations that were brought up. We're kind of used to government spending our money on doing things, even if it is a diesel plant that we're not actually even using right now. And it looks like a lot of money that might not ever be used again. But when you spend billions of dollars not holding the games, not building something, not doing it. That's the thing that I guess a lot of people went, hang on a minute, why is that the mentality of this government? And I think people have really struggled to come to terms with that, and I think that's something that will probably hang over his head for a long time.
And I will say I certainly don't think everything he did was right. The three things he got wrong was the Northwest Link, the Commonwealth Games, and driving Brian Mannix out of Victoria. And he will forever hold him responsible.
And I'm still waiting for those 4,000 hospital beds that we paid for, we still yet to see. Anyway, move on.
Let's move on. Let's go to our topic for this week now. And it is the five, well, we're going to say it was originally going to be five animals that you like. And then we went, no, well, that'll just, for me, that'll just be five different dog varieties because I love dogs and I don't really, not all that fond of that many other animals apart from dogs, to be honest. in terms of, you know, having a connection with them, apart from the horses that I back that win. But so we went the other way. We went the five animals that either you don't like or that frighten the bejesus out of you. So, Brian, you can start this week and tell us your number five.
Well, it wasn't, you know, I wanted this topic because I thought, let's do something for the girl listeners. You know, I don't love animals, so, you know. But anyway, let's choose the animals we hate, because girls, there's certain animals that girls would hate, and I think this is one of them. I'm talking of the Mexican walking fish.
Axolotl.
Axolotl, that's it.
Well, it was Axl Rose. What are you talking about?
So why'd you pick that?
Well, you know, who would want to have this thing that looks like a slimy turd with legs walking around? I just think it's hideous. You know, it's probably got a very nice nature. But for me, you know, if I've got an aquarium, the last thing I'm going to stick in it is a Mexican walking fish. They just look shit.
I have that at number five as well. I have that at my number five as well, because my oldest son, when he moved back in with us at one stage, this is my son from my first marriage, Justin, he had one and he bought it, and it sat out the lounge room window in a tank, and it had the most useless, horrible, ugly looking thing, and it did nothing. It seemingly it was like just a big slug in a tank. And I thought, well, what's the bloody, but it's not like you can't pat it and take it out for a walk or, you know, whatever. It just bloody useless, a horrible thing. And I just found it one of the most ridiculous pets I'd ever seen in my life.
Absolutely.
So I have the Mexican walking fish at my number five too. What do you got at number five, Finny?
We had a pet Mexican walking fish called Taco. We did.
Did you really?
Yeah.
It's a great name.
And we liked. Didn't do anything, but we liked.
I just can't come to terms with the pet that does nothing.
Yeah. Anyhow, so it doesn't feature in my list. So these are animals that we dislike or we're scared of stuff. Yeah?
Correct.
Yeah.
Or harbour some resentment towards.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Number five, I've got the horse.
Why?
Oh.
I love horses. I love riding horses. I absolutely love them as animals. But what was God thinking, if there is a God? I can't look at a horse without having penis envy. I mean, they were given so many more inches than is fair. I mean, you know, God, they've been blessed, the bastards.
Right then. We've set the tone for the rest of this. Right, O'Brien, so what do you got at number four? If you say donkey, I'll fennec him jump through the speakers.
I'm not going to talk about myself, kids.
It's oh, fair enough.
Animals,
good on you.
I think keeping in with the footy theme and what's happening at the moment, being spring, I'm going to say magpies, swooping little bastards. And I don't know what's going on in Melbourne, but everybody's getting cut in the face and their ears chunked out up here. And, you know, it's always nice to bag Collingwood. So I'm going to say magpies.
I'm going to too, but not till a little later on in my list will I include them in mine. But I go to the bird species for my number four. You've both been to the amusement parks and thrill rides parks on the Gold Coast, yes?
Yeah.
There's a bird that frequents those parks, and in particular the water one and SeaWorld. It's known as the bin chicken.
Yes.
The ibis. The ibis is one of the most not affected by human birds that you'll ever find. They don't give a shit about whether you're 5 stone, 15 stone or 55 stone. If you're sitting in a cafe, an outdoor cafe at one of those amusement parks on the Gold Coast, and you've got food of any description, that ibis is your best mate. And they will hang around you like there's no tomorrow. And I had one of the little bastards On the Gold Coast, when I was at one of the theme parks, I think we were at SeaWorld with my brother and his kids, and this mongrel bastard thing decided that not only was my food a captivating idea, I was actually obviously attached to those chips and that bloody roll or whatever I had, and started bloody not only stalking me but actually literally attacking me. And my brother's kids were quite small. So when we got back to the house after we'd had our day out at SeaWorld and I'd been terrorised by this freaking ibis, every time I turned around, I thought it was going to...
Hang on, I'm confused. Were you stalked by an ibis or ibis by a stork?
Well, so I had this... Because you're in shorts and stuff, there's recurring nightmare that the ibis was going to, you know, take my pecker off because he thought it was a chip. So... When we get
back, you certainly go horse.
You should have
said a potato cake at least.
When we got back,
a Chico roll. Thought it was a Chico roll.
No, well, all right, a Chico roll then. More like a
thought dim, it was a foot long hot dog.
More like a dim sim, or a little boy, or a little boys. Let's not kid ourselves here. So we get back to
a foot long hot dog with two dim sims. That's what it thought of that.
God, this segment's deteriorated quickly.
The old stupid dog.
So we get back to my brother's place and my poor bloody the boys decided that they'd play a prank on me. So when Paul and I went down the pub to refill the fridge with beer because I was drinking back in those days, they decided to dress like ibises and hang underneath the table and wait for us to come back. And when I would sit down at the table, they would then pretend to attack me and scare the bejesus out of me like an ibis. So that recurring nightmare with those bloody bin chickens, they're mongrels of bastards of things. I don't like them. What's your number four, Finey?
Number four, I know we've been mucking around and being lighthearted, but I actually need to be serious for a minute and I'm not joking.
Okay.
Number four is the hippopotamus.
Right.
No, I'm serious.
Oh, stop it.
Well, you're gonna feel bad in a minute.
Oh, okay, sorry.
They do kill a lot of people.
I am serious, and unfortunately it killed a mate of mine.
Oh, shit.
So I played cricket with a great bloke called Robert Lowry. You could not meet a better bloke. Handsome, tall, fast bowler. I was his captain in the ones, and he got married, and he went to South Africa for his honeymoon with his beautiful wife, and on their honeymoon he was on safari in a boat and got attacked by a hippo. He got bitten, but it was a female hippo. The boat tour guide took the long boat too close to where the mother hippo was mothering her calf, and he got bitten on the arterial femur, the big vein in the top of your leg, and unfortunately he bled out in his new wife's arms before they got to a hospital.
Jesus Christ.
Wow. Yeah, they kill more than alligators, I believe.
Yeah. And, you know, it was front page news here, of course, and just a terrible story. But ever since I've seen hippos, and people seem to think, oh, they're lovely, you know, because they look like innocuous sort of things with their ears, but they are very, very aggressive. And you watch documentaries on them and they're bastards, but they are very dangerous to humans. And sadly, Robert, who was just everybody loved Robert, larger than life, real, the sort of life of the party without being a dickhead type of bloke. Everybody loved him. Big 6'3" guy, lion-hearted, fast bowler, and he passed away, you know, in his mid-20s, killed by a hippo.
That's a horrible way to go.
Yeah, terrible.
But imagine when you get to heaven. You get up there and you're meeting, you know, Benjamin Franklin and, you know, all these great people. They go, so how'd you die? And you're bitten by a hippo. This guy got bitten by a hippo. Look, I know it's tragic, but, wow, it's in a very unusual way to die.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, but obviously not.
Well, as you said, Brian, maybe not.
Yeah, not as unusual as you think it is.
For some reason I've got 800 in my head. Oh, no, I think 800 is relevant. I think they kill about 800 people a year or something. They're not nice animals.
No.
And I think Disney's got a lot to blame because Disney, they're always cute, you know, singing the baritone bit or something. I think that's a good one, Brian.
Very good. Right. Number three, Brian.
Well, as Robert Williams said about the platypus that, you know, you reckon God doesn't get stoned. you know, you've got a mammal with a duck bill and it lays eggs and it's got fur and it swims. And, you know, it's just a stupid animal.
Yep.
It's like God was tired when he designed this thing. Well, I got to say, the dugong, it just looks like a, it looks like a cock swimming in the water.
Is that the snub-nosed one? Is that the one with the big snub-nosed thing?
Like a poor man's seal. Yeah, it's got a nose like a shovel.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at it now. They've got two front legs and no back legs. It's like, look, this will have to do. That just put them out there. It's like it was the end of the day when they designed this animal, and it is just a shit-looking animal, and as far as I know, it does absolutely fuck all. So the dugong, it's useless, slothy-looking thing of the ocean, is my number four.
And a shit band.
Yeah, I was about to say, wasn't there a band called the dugong?
Yeah, the dugong.
Yeah, they are a quite unusual-looking animal, aren't they? Yeah, okay. My number three, having grown up in Queensland for the, you know, the vast majority of my young life after leaving Melbourne, there's a strange little species.
I know exactly what you're going to say.
Strange little species in Queensland that can be, you know, not only part scary as shit, but also the most indestructible bloody thing on the planet is the cane toad.
I know exactly what you're talking about. The Brian Manning.
Yes, the cane toad. You won't have come across a lot of them on the Gold Coast, Brian. They're more suburban dwellers in the back part of your lawn, these scaly little mongrels with their little little jet things on their back and their open sort of plan on the back of them, that they're just revolting looking things. Look like a frog with really incredibly bad acne. And they are fair dinkum indestructible. You can hit them with a lawnmower and then go and think, oh, God, they've got that. But they're just impervious to all that stuff. You can flick them with a hockey stick over the fence and onto the road, and you can run over them, and you can do – seriously, you can do almost anything to these bloody things, and they are totally indestructible. And they are just revolting. And when they get pissed off and they bring the back up and they've got the little jet things that they shoot – shit out at you, or at least that's what I believe in my mind they're doing. They are nasty little bastards too. So and not little, they're the size of a bloody an album back in the old days.
Well,
horrible.
Have you seen the documentary called Cane Toads? I think it was made in late 80s, I think.
It's number three on my list of animals I don't like, Brian. I'm hardly likely to have watched a friggin' documentary.
It was made in the 70s. It's brilliant.
Really? Yeah, when the guy's got the VW Combi and he hates them. So you see them all on the road and he's swerving the car all over and he goes, oh, yeah, and they explode when their whole guts come out their ass. And he's just driving over here, pop, 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 pop. Then you've got another bloke with a golf stick hitting them. And then you've got some little girl dressing him up in baby clothing. It's a fantastic documentary.
And then there's a guy, he's got, goes out the back of his house with his dogs and with a can of Pal, and they eat the dog food, and they just, and somebody else puts them in a, puts like hundreds of them a night in a bucket, in a barrel, and drowns them. And,
oh, God.
Drowns them with water and taro or something.
Yeah, no, they're a sport in Queensland, or they were. They're probably not now.
But the whole documentary was how they're moving south and,
yes,
you know. Yeah, they were supposed to be in Melbourne about 10 years ago, but they never got here.
No, they won't come down here.
And apparently the poison that comes out of their back, if you lick it, you, like any poison, which is what acid is, but it's like an acid trip. So people get them and lick their back, as demonstrated in The Simpsons.
Yeah. Hallucinatory agents in there, I do believe.
You know, they got as far as Canberra, but were so disgusted by the scaly lizard that were there, they turned back.
I don't blame them one little bit. What's your number three, Fonny? Yours was your no. No, no, no,
number two.
I've got Fonny's. I put it in the wrong. So yours was the dugong. And Fonny's number three.
Well, we're doing all creatures. They don't have to be animals, do they?
Oh, well, go on. Tell us.
Here comes an insect.
Correct. I've always wanted to be irresistible. I've always wanted to be the guy that walks into a bar and all the women come up to me and, you know, drop dead gorgeous women just come up and...
Welcome to my world.
Well, would have that would have been your world for many years, Brian. I've saw the teeny boppers chasing you around on that Channel 9 show.
So do I.
Yes,
that was your world.
Jealous.
Did I say was? Is. Sure.
Yeah.
I've got no doubt.
You've got a padlock.
You're a
girl's coming up. Girls come in and see my view and they just take their clothes off. It's ridiculous. No, I'm joking. I'm morally, ethically not that guy. But anyway, sorry, I've interrupted.
Oh, no, I'm fully up for confessions of a former pervert.
I finally got that sex room that you wanted.
Yeah, that's my room. Get out of it. Anyhow, so, you know, I've always wanted to be the bloke that they swarm around. Well, in the end, I got my wish, except it turned out not women, mosquitoes.
Right.
Mosquitoes find me fucking irresistible for some reason. And I don't know why. Certain people just attract mosquitoes. I can be outside with Natalie and with other people and I'll just get bitten and they're icky. I'm not one of those people who are lucky and get bitten and they don't feel anything.
People that do that happens to shit me.
Yeah. I'm outside with Natalie. She goes, no, they don't come to me. And then I always used to think, my mum used to tell me, that's because your blood is sweet because you eat too much sugar and blah, blah, all these other stupid stories. And then I heard once on radio, the reason why mosquitoes go to certain people and not others is that it's an odour that we have. Now, it's not a bad odour, so it's not BO or anything like that, and it's not an odour that can be smelt by human beings.
All right.
But there's a pheromone or a thing that about 50% of the people have that attract mosquitoes will go to them first. It's not that they won't go to other people, but in a crowd, I must give off a strong mosquito pheromone because Natalie, literally, when we're out in places that have mosquitoes, she intentionally sidles up next to me. And I say, this is not fair. You're using me as a mosquito coil.
I know that exactly, Finey. And if you tan and you use hairspray, you're even in bigger trouble. But in 36 years I was with Sue, she never needed air guard at all because I just took them all. They freaking love me.
I fucking hate them.
Yes. Yes, they are.
They can really wreck your night and your day. They are shit.
Yep.
During summer, I can be lying in bed and I'll actually hear them buzzing around my ear.
Oh, yeah, bloody hell.
It's like the Battle of Britain.
Yeah.
You know, there's planes diving down at you. That's why a bat is a good thing because apparently a bat eats 18,000 mosquitoes a night.
Is that right?
I saw one bird.
I've got a bat to hit them with.
Well, some of them can get pretty big, but no.
Isn't that one of the worst things in the world is when they've actually got you and you hit one and then all the blood comes out. God, that's disgusting.
Oh, yeah.
That's so disgusting. Yeah, or on the wall or on you or I'm with you on that one, Fonny.
Well, when they're biting you, if you hold your breath, it closes the pores in your skin. And they're stuck there. So then they're biting you.
Why would you do that?
Hold your breath and then you can kill the bastard.
And bleed all over you.
And do you know this statistic? This is a fact. Mosquitoes have killed 100 times more humans than every other animal and creature on the earth put together.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, with malaria.
Malaria, of course.
They're worse than hippos.
Of course, malaria. Yes, of course.
But every other animal combined.
That's frightening. That is frightening. Yeah. Number two, Brian. Number two, Brian, what do you got?
Number two is a crocodile. And, you know, I think there's a time and a place for crocodiles. But having spent a lot of time in
on
Darwin,
your feet or in a handbag.
I think there's a lot of truth in that. But then, you know, I went out to the Jumping Crocs in Darwin on the Adelaide River, and my God, they're prolific. And then they were protected for way too long. There's way too many crocodiles. You know, you got to cull. Forget this greeny, freaking animal-loving bullshit. They're not nearly extinct. They are freaking dangerous beasts that study you. And it's one of the few animals that I would have absolutely no problem shooting in the head with a shotgun and just watching it die and roll over. You know, I don't think I could do that to many animals. Or, you know, when they jump up like in the jumping crocs, have a big penny bunger and just chuck it down its mouth and let it blow up in its guts. I really don't like crocodiles. They're good in a Tarzan movie with Johnny Weissmuller or something, but they are just a shit dinosaur that should have, I don't know, I just don't like them. They ruin so many great places to swim. And you can't swim because they're there. And no. You know, I think, you know, and they've even admitted now that, you know, they were a bit ridiculous with the protection of them. And, you know, you got a whole lot of people culling them because it's just, you've got to put people first before animals. You know, we're the top of the food chain. And, you know, to let too many of a really dangerous animal, you know, you don't want them to go extinct, but now you're endangering human life because you're being so woke. So fuck the crocodile for me.
Okay. Spiders are my number two. I don't like spiders. I'm shit frightened of spiders. I don't care if those people go, oh, the huntsman, they won't hurt you. You're bullshit. They look scary enough and they're too scary for me. And if they weren't some sort of attack thing, why do they, you know, jump down from the ceiling when you go anywhere near them. So, and as a kid growing up, a lot of redbacks in Queensland in my youth, a lot of redbacks under, you know, bricks and all sorts of things. They were bloody horrible little mongrels they were. Fortunately, never got bitten by one, but certainly saw my bloody fair share of them. And huntsmen and spiders in general frighten the bejesus out of me. So that's my number two. Finey.
My number two is dogs.
Hang on a minute.
Our dogs.
That's better.
You are not going to win any friends with this one, I tell you. Girls will be listening and he doesn't like dogs. They're not going to even hear what you say next.
In the immortal words of that red-headed politician, please explain.
If you gave me my list of five favourite animals, they'd be number one on my favourite.
Yeah.
Always had a pet dog. Got the beautiful Willow now, the magnificent Border Collie. I've got four kids and a dog, and let me tell you, if I had to put them in order smartest to dumbest, the dog is not fifth.
So hang on. So how does a dog make you number two?
I've had a pet dog all my life pretty much. So for 99% of the time I love dogs, and any time I ever step in dog shit, is the worst 5 minutes of my life. It is unbearable. It's beyond, when you break that skin, now, it's bad on a scale of 1 to 100, 95, it gets a 95 for being bad when you step in your own dog's dog shit. But for the occasions in life when I step in somebody else's dog's dog shit, I want to destroy the world. I really, if there was a national vote, what's it called, the national vote, a referendum on whether or not to kill people who leave their dogs shit on the footpath, I would vote yes. 100% I would vote. So as much as I love dogs, for those times in life, and there's probably only been 20 or 30, it's not like it happens every day, but enough to have had an effect on me that I've stepped in dog shit. And for the 5 or 10% of the time that it's another person's dogs, dogs are at number two on the list. Because by crikey, I don't know what they eat and I don't know how their body works, but shit which don't smell good at the best of times smells particularly bad when it comes out the arse of a pooch.
No, I can see where you're coming from with that, and I don't disagree with any of the things you just said. Stop sending me photos of dugongs on the bloody phone, will you, Mannix?
Excuse me.
Yeah, what?
This is my number two animal. It's not a dugong.
No, hang on. You're up to your number one.
My number one.
Yeah, you've had horse, hippos.
I didn't have a horse.
No, sorry. You had Mexican walking fish.
Yes.
Then you had magpies.
Yes.
Then you had
the dugong.
Oh, sorry, it is your number two.
The crocodile. Oh, yep. Okay, so it is my number one.
Yeah, your number one, yes.
Well, I did want to put shark in, but I'm happy not to because I love sharks, but they scare the shit out of me, so I figured that may qualify. But if you look at your phone, you will see a photo of the naked mole rat.
Is that what that is?
It looks like a dick with arms and legs this time.
Well, I thought it was a dugong.
Fair dinkum. I think that is the most disgusting-looking animal. You know, put some fur on it. Put a chicken's, you know, little frill on the top of its head. Do something. This animal needs a big makeover.
So what is it exactly? What's it called?
The naked mole, also known as the sand puppy, is a burrowing rodent native to the Horn of Africa and parts of Kenya.
Of course it is.
Notably in the Somali region.
Yeah.
I don't know what it tastes like because it certainly doesn't look any good.
Jesus.
So I think you should put the picture of the naked mole rat up on the Facebook page.
I'll take that under advisement.
All right, I'm going to tell you something about the naked mole rat.
Oh, God.
Now, the naked mole rat is one of the most important creatures on the planet. Did you know that?
No, but I hope you're about to tell me why.
The naked mole rat, of all studyable animals like rodents and whatever, is virtually immune to cancer. It can't get cancer. And a lot of cancer studies are around naked mole rats. They have a longevity gene that actually has been taken out of mole rats and put into mice, and the mice live like three times longer.
Goodness me.
And they believe that the secret to unlocking longevity and good health, they don't have any signs of dementia. They don't, as they get older, they are the only species known to man that doesn't degenerate.
But they started off shit house.
They're not subject to aging like any other creature on Earth.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for that. Now that we know that. Now, Brian, for a minute. Let Finey do his number one and we'll be here for 3 months doing this show.
All right. As much as I defend the naked mole rat,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I like the fact that they're naked and they're promiscuous, obviously.
Right.
But I think I've discussed this with you before and I'm not going to go into depth now because it's something I don't like talking about, but I actually have a genuine phobia, I'm scared of, not that I don't like, not that I just, I don't like these.
Rats.
I have a proper problem with rats.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I've sought help for and has caused me, you know the term being paralysed with fear?
Yep.
It's happened to me.
Yeah. No, I knew it would be your number one because you've spoken about it, as you say, before on the show.
You know, I had a rat that we saw outside my house where I used to live in South Yarra. And as I've told you before, I didn't come home for 2 days. And then when I came home, I was in the garage and I couldn't get out of the car for 10 hours. Now, that rat was long gone, but there were exposed beams in the garage. And just psychologically, I was just convinced. I was in my car all night that I could hear noises, I could hear scurrying.
Yeah.
There were no signs of any rats there. So, you know, I don't need to go into any more detail, but rats by the length of the Flemington Strait.
Yeah, no, I figured that would be your number one. I knew it was a real and paralysing fear that you have, which is horrible, horrible,
terrible.
Mine's magpies. My number one's magpies because the little bastards, and I've been reading about them because it's swooping season again. Apparently, they do recognise you and they do go you again if they get you. I had this thing where this bloody thing in the street around from the corner where I live. I was walking and it swooped me. And then the next day I was riding the bike. I was doing a bit of bike riding just a few years ago now. And it swooped me again. And so I saw the little bludger on the top of the wires, on the electrical wires. So I actually took a little photo with my camera, with my phone. And I rang the local because I then checked whether the council had things to help with this because it was swooping, and it was not just swooping me, it was swooping lots of people. So I rang the council up and they put me onto this bloke, and he's the wildlife officer or whatever he was. He took my concerns very seriously, and I appreciated that, and he said he'd come down and have a look. And then he rang me from the street around the corner and asked me if I would like to come down, because he'd spotted the magpie, and if I'd like to come down and do a reenactment for him just to prove that the magpie actually did swoop and that it was a danger to the local community, and then he would do whatever it was he was going to do. I don't know whether he had a slug gun in the boot of the council vehicle or whatever, but he wanted me to go around the corner and do, I thought it was someone taking the piss out of me, but they were fair to come, and do a reenactment on my bike. You know, he said, get on your bike, come around, drive, ride down the thing, and if the magpie swoops you, then we'll take action. If it doesn't, well, we won't. I said, are you serious? And he said, yeah, I'm deadly serious. I said, well, you know, I'd suggest that I'm not doing that because I'm not that big a dickhead, and I just suggest that you wait there until the magpie swoops you and then foot it up the arse or whatever it is you're going to do to it, and we'll all be happy. The magpie did disappear from that street, but funnily enough, that weekend we went to Inverloch, and Sarah and I are walking along the back streets around the back of her mum's place in Inverloch, and this frigging magpie swooped me. Didn't go anywhere near Sarah, and I reckon it was the same bastard. I reckon he'd
gone. Because he dogged on him.
I reckon he'd gone, back of this, I'm going to for the weekend. He went to Inverloch for the weekend, and the bastard found me.
You dogged him to the cops,
yes,
and he got you.
Yes, but this wildlife ranger who wanted me to go around the corner and reenact the, I thought, my God, like Crime Stoppers for magpies.
Magpie 3, this time it's personal.
Well, bloody was.
Magpies like most birds. Most birds have got fantastic visual memory, much better than humans. So they've got, it's not just that their eyesight's great, but they remember what they see.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, have a look at David Attenborough and his work with a particular crow, I think it is. And he can take a pebble, the crow's favourite pebble, and put it in a pile with 1,000 pebbles that look exactly the same, and the crow will pick out the pebble every time. Anyhow, look up David Attenborough and crow. Great stuff. Anyhow. So magpies have got great visual memory. There used to be magpies in the tree outside my house when I lived in Elsternwick. And I would give them little bits of food, little bits of bread or whatever.
Yeah.
And they would come out of the tree and, very cute, would hop all the way up the driveway, up on the step, and I could feed them. These same magpies, when people walked under the tree or rode under the tree, would swoop them really dangerously. And I used to love it. It was like my own army of swooping protectors. And I would come home and people would be ducking from them. I'd come home, I'd sit on the front step of my house and they'd jump out of the tree and walk up to me. They thought I was a wizard.
I was going to say, it's like a Harry Potter film where they got, you know, three or four magpies lined up on your arm and go, sick 'em, boys.
Yeah. So I think it's pretty weak. You've paid them for protection money.
I paid them to be hitmen. They were fantastic.
You and your mafia birds, I don't know. We need to do a whole episode on this.
Well, it won't be this one because this one's now finished. We're now done. And finally, you're in charge of next week's list, and then the week after, probably seeing it is Rocktober, we'll get back into music in a couple of weeks. But you can come up with the list for next week.
All right,
boys. Thank you. It's been swell. Enjoy your week, and we'll talk next week at the same time for this fabulous, enlightening, engaging, and thoroughly entertaining podcast.
Which one? Where?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I'll try and find one between now and then.
I'm sure everybody feels a little bit smarter
than us. Correct. Good night, boys.
Very good. See ya.
Good night, John Boy.
You've just experienced Ruck and Roll. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and Facebook.